Did you know back in 1845 that Steamboat was actually Texas? And every year for 22 consecutive years, they have sold out Steamboat Music Fest. It's going to sell out again. This is Bree Bagwell inviting you to the coolest music fest in Steamboat, Colorado. It happens every January. You've seen it. Have you not been? What are you waiting for? It is the original Texas Music Festival with over 50 bands in the Texas and Red Dirt music scene. You never know. Kevin Fowler might be just eating lunch next to you one day. With the Steamboat Music Fest package, you get 6 days of mountainside lodging, 4 days of lift passes, one night lift pass. Don't miss out. You're going to have so much FOMO if you're watching on social media. So just go to themusicfest.com, sign up for that email newsletter. You can get on the wait list. You never know. Steamboat Music Fest, down home, up high. Come get real with us. Steamboat Music Fest. Hey, this is Bree Bagwell with Only Vans Podcast, and I don't know about you, but I don't want to spend time worrying about things like taxes and bookkeeping and the IRS. I'm from a family of accountants, so take my word for it. You need someone that is specialized in Texas taxes, and Lakeside Tax and Bookkeeping are pro QuickBooks advisors, and Stacey has been doing this for over 25 years. Girl knows what she's doing, and I just did all my sales taxes. Just trust me, get someone who knows what they're doing to help you. In addition, Stacy is an enrolled agent of the IRS. That sounds fancy because it is, and it means you won't be getting in trouble with the IRS. Go to lakesidetax.com today and sign up with my girl Stacy and get the IRS tax and bookkeeping help that you need.
Kyle was saying that you brought up this really cool story, and it was so funny because I said, how am I going to bring this up, Kyle? Because he said there was a shaman and there was New Orleans and there's this piano player guy and you should ask him about that. And I was like, well, how am I going to ask him about that? So that's how I asked you about that.
Segue into that story. This is interesting stuff. And yeah, a lot of my 20s were, you know, I talk about them sometimes like it was all misspent or, you know, but it wasn't all bad. I mean, there were some wild times in there where I maybe made some bad decisions.
Hey, hey, everybody. This is Bree Bagwell, and this is my podcast, Only Vans, where I talk to my friends in my van.
I went into the Redbird yesterday to drop off a guitar to Mr. Brady.
Yep.
And I walked right in, just like it was my own house, just like stormed in.
I mean, you know, we want you to feel like it's home.
Thank you. Well, I did. And it was Lloyd Maines and Terry Hendrix were sound checking. Yeah. And I was like, oh, hi, guys. Like, I felt so bad because the last thing sometimes when you're sound checking, you don't want other people in there.
Sure.
So I hope that they were okay with it.
They're so cool, man.
They're so nice.
I'm sure it was just, you know, rolled right off her back. But, yeah.
No, I gave her a hug.
Man, she's amazing.
She's incredible. I love everything she does.
She really has, like, just such a kind spirit, you know. And she works really hard. And, you know, and too has, I think, you know, like, remained entirely independent.
Wow.
Which is, you know, as you know, is a hard way to go, but... Mm-hmm. I think rewarding.
She was great, and I gave her a hug, and then I was so excited to see her. I was also excited to see Lloyd, but I don't know him as well, so I was just like, hi, Lloyd Maines, and then I ran away, and I think Polyson was like, and then they're I hope they don't think we're rude, but
no, I'm sure not.
Okay, I just didn't want to intrude, but are you hot? I know, I'm so sorry. Look at her, she's so hot. It's not cool in here. We really tried, but it's fine. Okay. Sorry about that.
No, it's cool.
Well, you were laying in the grass outside of the RV when I went to get you just now.
I was pretty comfortable too, actually.
It was a record cover. Your head was on your guitar and your cool truck was behind you. And I was like, this is a record cover, but unfortunately I have to pee. So I didn't get to take it. So, thanks for being here, Dallas Burrow, owner of all of our hearts and the Redbird listening room.
Thanks for that. Yeah, that was
I don't know what happened there. This is the third podcast, so like all bets are off.
It's all good.
Third one in a row.
Keep it loose, keep it real.
Is that what I'm doing? I'm not really sure at this point, but I didn't really prepare as much for your podcast because we're friends. So it's like, I mean, I'm friends with the other people, of course, but I don't know them that well.
Sure.
So I was like, me and Dallas, we're just going to wing it.
Yeah, no,
and
I'm sure
like that's what we do best. But I want to talk about your venue.
Okay.
If you want, I just think.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk only about. We have so much to talk about that I don't want to miss
that part?
No, absolutely. That's a good place to start for sure. Yeah.
It's not, I was going to say, it's not like, because it's the least exciting thing. It's,
well, it's,
I'm saying you're the most interesting man in the world. So that's like, you're the, it's like the Dos Equis man and then Dallas Burrow. So
you're too sweet.
The least exciting thing about your life is the most exciting thing to most people's life. So let's start there.
You set that up really nice.
Thank you. I'm here all day.
Yeah. The Redbird has absolutely kind of like taken on a life of its own and become, you know, I don't know. It's a special deal.
Can we say iconic? I think so.
I mean,
it's a new Braunfels gem. Like, so was it something that you always wanted to do, or how did, I don't even know how, you probably told me after I drank a bunch of wine and I forgot.
Sure. But yeah, you know, what's funny is that it was not really something that I saw in the cards necessarily, or that I like aspired to do, but the opportunity presented itself, and you know, a lot of the credit goes to my mom. I have to say that first and foremost, because you know, she is a really hardworking business person, entrepreneur, has her own company outside of the Redbird, and so the property where the Redbird sits, she purchased for her own business, and which is there on the place. She has a direct mail marketing printing operation called Direct Texas. And man, if you know anybody out there needs anything printed, I'm talking about concert posters. Like, she did all the posters for Robert Earl's last tour, and like Shane Smith, and all, she's done all kinds of people. Morgan Avery's brought her a lot of work. Morgan's great.
Oh, Morgan's the best.
Mm-hmm.
We love Morgan so much, except everyone loves Morgan, so now she's like 2 years behind. So if you need something done,
yeah,
she's in high demand.
She is. She's badass. She did a
not behind. I mean, just like booked out 2 years.
No, I know what you mean. Yeah, yeah. Hey, man. But when you do great work, that's what happens, right?
That's exactly right.
So anyway, so mom, you know, had. Her business there still does, but so the old house where the Redbird is was just sitting on the property, and you know, the story behind it is it was built in the 30s. The original name on the deed was Louise Henney. Now there's Henney's Hardware downtown.
Oh right, okay. That place is awesome.
Yeah, it's
love that place.
It's you know, it's like a staple in the community.
Yep.
But so, same family that built that, you know, presumably would have had that business, built the original structure of the Redbird. And then, anyway, it was, you know, it changed hands a few times. At one time, it housed, like, a plumbing office. And, like, the offices for a plumber was the most recent thing that was there before us.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was so most of the structure was boarded up, actually. And where my office is was their office before. But yeah, we had to, you know, it was all boarded up. So I had to like push in the door, and I was the first person to be in that place in like 30 years. And everything was like, you know, old furniture covered in sheets and dust and cobwebs. And, you know, it looked like ghosts and raccoons had been living in there, you know. And honestly, like, I wouldn't have ever dreamed in a million years that any sort of business, much less any sort of successful business, could happen. But, you know, bless my mom's heart, man. She saw the potential in it, much the way that she's always seen the potential in me.
Oh, you moms. I mean? That's moms. That's their job.
That's what's up, man. So anyway, she did. And so to her credit, she sourced all the materials. She became her own contractor for the property, subcontracted out the carpenters, everything else. You know, I came in during COVID. It gave, you know, I was, you know, I had been traveling quite a bit before that. So during COVID, that gave me a chance to be around more, and then to kind of like help oversee the completion of the you know, construction and the renovations. You know, I was responsible for doing like brute manual labor, like building the rock fence in the back and stuff.
Do you know we're building a house? Are those skills still fresh?
I can pick up heavy stuff if you want me to.
Oh, great. Perfect. I don't know if that's something that we need.
If Paul needs a hand.
Deal.
But okay. Anyway, so yeah, you know, but really like toward the end of the renovation, as I saw the place come together, because, you know, prior to the work that was, you know, done to make it what it is, it was like a junkyard. I mean, there was something like 50 or 60 tires in the backyard. There was just all this random crazy stuff that had to get hauled off. And anyway, so basically, as I saw it come together and like really materialize, and like, oh my God, this is like actually like a magic little place.
It's so magical. There's church pews in there. Yeah. There's kind of like, not bleacher seats, or what am I trying to say?
They're old auditorium seats for, yes, like theater seating.
Theater seating, and there's, yeah, only like 60 tickets.
60 seats is, you know, our standard cap capacity.
It's BYOB, which is really fun because, mm-hmm, sometimes I'll get there and I'll just like look around and see what everybody BYOB
brought
for me, and BYO brought, and I'm like,
people will share.
Yeah, they share, and sure, sometimes people bring some nice wine. And anyway, what also you've done, I mean, there is music on what I would call regular nights, but my favorite thing that you do is you have the Sunday 4 p.m. shows, which for us is so awesome because that's the days that we are home anyway, and right, then we get to go in our backyard, you know, make some really good cash. And also, those are like the soul shows, which are the ones where everyone's listening. Some of my like absolute favorite shows have been in your venue. It's a really magical place, and there's no talking. Have you ever had any like talkers that you had to like, do you go like intimidate them with your stature?
You know, hardly. The one time we've ever had, I mean, there's sure, like, so, you know, sometimes we have to remind folks, but there's only been one instance where it got to a point where like somebody was asked to leave, and it was a couple of ladies, and they'd had a few drinks, and I think really they didn't realize what they were coming into. Or what
was
they
it me?
No, it wasn't, okay, you. But I wasn't there at the time actually. But I think either my mom or my wife, you know, kind of like politely asked them to go. And what's funny is then I ran into these people later. I was playing somewhere around town. And I had them come up to me and tip me and start talking to me. And then I invited them to my place, and they were like, anyway, it was kind of funny, but,
we've been kicked out of your venue before.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's
and
amazing.
So I had to, you know, I tried to kind of damage control. I was like, listen, just come back, give us another shot. Just understand what, you know, the premise is. But so, yeah, it hasn't come up too much. Usually people, you know, are very respectful and very appreciative.
And now the Roots and Branches is there. When did, like, is that ongoing? It's there now? That's, yeah, awesome. So it was, yeah, so cool. I got to play the Redbird with Ray Wiley Hubbard and, uh-huh, sing, and Paul got to play, you know.
Yeah, that was a great show.
It was Drunken Poet's Dream with Ray Wiley. And yeah, it was.
Yes, ma'am.
What a magical spot. I love it. Well, your journey, and now your family and your awesome wife, and you're working with mom and dad. Dad's directing traffic outside, yeah, and mom's in there and your wife's there, and mm-hmm, it's just an amazing family operation you have going there.
My folks are great, man. It's and you know, my sister is involved. She does the website. My niece works behind the bar some. I mean, it's, you know, it's, yeah, we got everybody involved, and it's been a really sweet thing for us too. I mean, just as far as like just on a personal level, the community that's been created around it. The songwriters night that happens on Thursday nights, there's a bunch of regulars and stuff, and we, you know, we'll do potluck on Thanksgiving and at Christmas and different, you know.
Oh, beautiful.
So it is. It's sweet, man. It's been a cool deal. Roots and Branches being there is definitely an amazing thing. I grew up kind of hanging, you know, I can remember being too young to be in a bar and hanging around and trying to listen to Mattson and Ray Wiley and some of those early Roots and Branches, yeah, shows at Tavern.
Wow.
You know, so I can, yeah, remember being over there as a kid and just like, you know, in awe of the whole thing.
R.I.P. Tavern.
Of, you know, but of the spectacle of the radio show and of, you know, just, of, you know, just being around the music, I've just always been enamored by it. So, but anyways, so for it to come full circle and to now have those guys in the Redbird is super magic.
I'm so proud of you and now can we talk about you playing Green Hall?
Yeah, totally.
I mean, yeah. I don't know if you want to give everyone the backstory or if you want me to give the backstory that I don't know.
I guess, you know, I will just suffice it to say that, you know, growing up in this town and trying to figure out who I was and, you know, just trying to figure out life, I made some poor decisions, you know, when I was young. And you know, it happens, right? But anyway, so there was a period of time where I was not allowed to play Green Hall or to really to even be there. So yeah, I've been, you know, technically banned from there for about half of my life. And but like I said, I don't want to get too much into the details of, you know, I made some bad decisions. But the you know, the happy ending here is that,
yeah,
after 5 years of sobriety and staying out of trouble and working really hard all the time and, you know, being able to hopefully, you know, having proved myself a little bit as an artist, they have given me another shot. And it's one of the great honors of my lifetime. Really.
Of course. Yeah. And I saw your Instagram post and I was like, oh my gosh, if I'm here, I will be there for that. 'Cause that's so epic, and you deserve that. And I know that I always talk about you or talk with you about sobriety, and we kind of have these, like, yeah, special like tiny nuggets of time where we play shows together or I'm at your venue or sure, I see you where I'm and I always enjoy our conversations and
same.
And you always have great perspective on things, and you'll tell me that, like, this is the Dallas Burrow. He goes, let me give you some perspective on this. That's what you say to me a lot. But because there is a lot to be grateful for.
Absolutely.
And you're very good at seeing things from that angle. But well, not in a negative, like, you're not, you don't scold me like you're not being grateful, but you're like, hey, just look at it from this angle.
For sure.
You're very good at that.
I think it's important. You know, I don't know. I've been through some hard stuff in my life, and so I you know, I always try to be very mindful of being very grateful for every day that we get, you know, in the first place, but also too, just, you know, as far as being an artist goes and having a career and everything, I think it's really important to be you know, to be kind to yourself and to realize, you know, that all the hard work that you put in to this thing that you love is all for something. And it's for that dream that you had when you were a little girl. And it's, you know, and it counts for a lot. And you know, there are plenty of people who would kill to have less than what you have.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I've replayed those words that you said, 'cause we won't say who it is or where it was, but, you know, I played at the O4 Center and you played with me there, and it was an awesome show.
It was fun.
And I was like a little bit down because I only sold like 100 and something tickets or something. Well, by me, I mean we. Like,
we.
But I'm just, yeah, I was taking it like a little bit hard that I didn't like sell it out or something. And you were saying, you know, just how it doesn't matter. Because if you play with a big artist, then the venue owner might be like, wow, this artist, they can't sell tickets for nothing. And they had sold thousands of tickets, but they, yeah, didn't sell 10,000 tickets. And so it's right, like every artist also deals with what we deal with, but just on a different level or an added
different
zero
scale
or something. Yeah.
But, you know, across the board, if you're looking at it strictly from a business standpoint, it's really easy to get down, you know? I mean, to me, you know, probably that night, most of those folks were there to see you, and then probably most of those folks had never seen me. And so, from my perspective, I was so glad to get to play for those 100 and however many people. I thought it was a beautiful crowd, you know?
They were beautiful, and they loved you.
And they love you.
Hey, this is Bree Bagwell, and if you want to listen to this podcast early and ad-free, subscribe to my Patreon at www.patreon.com/BreeBagwell.
Oh, hi, this is Cindy Howes from Basic Folk, and here's what's happening on the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network. Only Vans, a Texas country music pod with rock star host Bree Bagwell, recently welcomed Matt Hillier.
You sang a song nobody had ever heard, and you kept going, come on, everybody, sing it with me.
You know the words.
You know the words. It was the best.
On Basic Folk, honest conversations with folk musicians, myself and co-host Lizzie Noh recently featured John Moreland.
Some of the lyrics
they're like, you seem to know some things you must have overheard. It sounds like it's talking about a lover. A couple minutes into the song, he's talking about a smartphone, and it just creeped me out so hard that I got a flip phone too.
Oh, wow. And finally, the String Dusters' Travis Book is hosting the Travis Book Happy Hour, live music and conversation from guests like Trey Hensley.
Just listening to Earl Scruggs play the banjo or play the guitar, you always knew it was him. There was always those people that played, and you immediately, within a few seconds of hearing their instrument, knew it was them.
Hear it all and more on the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network or wherever you get podcasts.
Hi there, my name's Jarrett Reddick. You may know me as Bree Bagwell's very best friend. But I'm also the singer for the band Bowling for Soup. I release country music under my name Jarrett Ray Reddick. I'm the guy that sings the Phineas and Ferb theme song. Oh, and I do a podcast called Rockstar Dad Show. Each week, myself and the drummer for Bowling for Soup, Gary, talk about being dads. We talk to other dads. Sometimes they're rock stars, comedians, actors, neighbors. One time we even had a mom on the show. If you like to laugh, if you're a dad, if you've ever had a dad or ever wanted a dad, this is the show for you. Rockstar Dad Show, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Are you ready to take your merchandise to the next level? Well, just ask me who I use, and that is CH Lone Star Promo. They specialize in screen printing and direct-to-garment, embroidery, laser engraving, anything promo-related, they can do it. Step up your merch game now with CH Lone Star Promo and tell them Brian Whiskey sent you.
Just saw Cody Canada post something the other day about, you know, how he was up on the West Coast and you know, some club he had played. It's like, anyway, the crux of it was he was, you know, saying that If it's 150 to 200 people for the rest of his life, he's happy, man. He's out getting to play for people.
That's amazing.
You know?
Yeah, because I really take it hard when I don't have the ticket sales that I want. I take it really hard, and I don't know how to fix that about myself. But I think it's also because we're at a point where, you know, like on Wednesday we had a ton of people, and the bar was like, "This is the best crowds we've ever had," and I was like riding this high, and then when we didn't have the crowd that I wanted on Friday, it was almost like I took it twice as hard because I had just had this amazing crowd. And it's like, there's no,
oh yeah,
you know, middle ground. It's like highs and lows. And sometimes I'm like, I wish I could just have like a weekend where I'm like, well, that was just like a pretty good weekend all around, instead of that was ultimate highs and ultimate lows. When you're riding that wave for a long time, it starts to wear on you a little bit. And that's when I think, you know, we've had that talk where I have to be careful what you lean on and what you are medicating with, and
yeah,
you know, alcohol or whatever cannot be or should not be that thing, because it doesn't support you in the way that you need.
Well, I mean, you have to be intuitive about those things, mm-hmm. and listen to your heart about, you know, what your body does or doesn't need. And it's not for anybody else to say, but you know,
if
it's something that's on your heart, then that's
well, know, something I can't
to consider.
I can't quit Diet Coke, so that's why I never did drugs, because if I can't quit Diet Coke, then I don't need to be like trying anything else. But interesting. But Kyle was saying that you brought up this really cool story, and it was so funny because I said, how am I going to bring this up, Kyle? Because he said there was a shaman, yeah, and there was New Orleans, and there's this piano player guy, and you should ask him about that. And I was like, well, how am I going to ask him about that? So that's how I asked you about that.
Segue into that story.
You know, just a smooth, on this podcast, we're all about smooth segues into the next topic.
This is interesting stuff. And You know, a lot of my 20s were, you know, I talk about them sometimes like it was all misspent, or, you know, but it wasn't all bad. I mean, there were some wild times in there where I maybe made some bad decisions for sure. But I had a lot of really great experiences traveling and meeting different folks. And one of these times when I was about 19 or 20 years old, I was going through a little rough patch, and a friend of mine named Timothy Abdenauer, who was a guy I met in Austin. So I was born and raised in New Braunfels, but I left town when I was like 16, and I moved to Austin and I finished high school up there. I was just, it's like, it was too small a town for me at that point in my life, so I had to leave, kind of thing. And so this buddy of mine takes me out to Kinky Friedman's house to clear my head.
Oh my gosh.
And Kinky has a place in Medina called Echo Hill Ranch that his parents started a summer camp years ago at. And so my buddy Timothy had been a camp a camper and then a camp counselor there. And anyway, so we went camping out there, and Kinky wasn't home, but who was home was this guy named the Reverend Goat. And the Goat was a Cherokee shaman, and Kinky and the Goat had been on tour with Bob Dylan in 1976 on the Rolling Thunder Review, and he was like one of the most interesting characters I've ever met in my life.
Well, I would say so. I would hope so.
And anyway, so he had me, he asked me sort of to drive him to New Orleans. He was playing a show with Dr. John, who is a legendary New Orleans piano player, a blues guy, really wild stuff, man. I mean, just, you know, the spiritual and musical and cultural and just all of the things that make New Orleans what it is, I got a really heavy dose of it, kind of a pivotal point in my life, because of the Goat and because of Kinky and because all the, you know, just the, just that path I was on. And so, yeah, that was an interesting time. I mean, you know, I got really interested in Native American, spirituality and, you know, New Orleans is a city of voodoo, and that was all kind of like around. Oh, yeah. And so, you know, ultimately, I mean, you know, Kinky, who recently passed, rest his soul, and the Goat passed a few years back, you know, these guys, they had a big impact on me in that, you know, it was as a young musician and artist, I was, you know, just blown away by like what larger than life characters they were. And so anyway, yeah. But then, you know, of course, after, you know, years of traveling and you know, kind of getting in and out of trouble here and there and partying a lot, you know, part of my path was around the time, you know, I got sober. That was also like a spiritual sort of, you know, kind of watershed moment where I, you know, I had like a real life coming to Jesus moment, you know, and I decided right then and there. And it was because of my son and my wife, that I knew I had to, you know, change my entire life style. And, you know, I just been, you know, it was not just, the drinking. It was also, you know, hard drugs and stuff that, you know, kind of come along with the rock and roll lifestyle, but it all just came to a head. And so I really, you know, when my son was, you know, not very old, maybe a year or so, I you know, I had this kind of moment with Stacy where, you know, she was like, you know, I knew that she would give me a chance, but I was going to have to completely fix a lot of things. And so that, you know, at that point, my hair was down to here, and I'd been partying and drinking a lot. I was a little overweight, man. I went home, and I cut my hair, and I joined the gym, and I went back to church, and I lost, like, 30 pounds, and I got in the best shape of my life. And I you know, I stuck with, you know, my beliefs. And it's, anyway, it's been a really incredible journey. And you know, so it's all pretty amazing sitting here now, you know, looking back on it.
Yeah, because I've only known that version of you. Like, that's all that I've known.
Right.
So I can almost not even picture,
right,
a different version of you. Like,
well, and I'm thankful for that. You know, I'm thankful, but the thing is, like, there are people that do remember that version of me. And so that's why it's taken the time it's taken for me to put in unwavering hard work to prove to people that I'm a different person. And it's, you know, it's worth every bit of it.
Yeah, you are a gentle giant. Are you Native American?
You know, it's funny. My mom would laugh and say no, but my dad has very dark skin, you know, very kind of like strong features. And his mom, my grandma, I remember her telling us that, you know, her grandmother was Native. And so we have that kind of oral tradition that we probably have some Native blood. But, you know, of course, I've had...
She's like trying to hold your hand.
I've had my ancestry done. And, you know, ironically, at least in the, you know, the test results I got back, we didn't have any. But what I did, me and my dad are both 1% Nigerian.
Wow. Interesting, because I swore, my grandma always told me that I was part Native American, so I grew up believing that I was 1/32nd Cherokee, and
right.
I just did my DNA, and
yeah.
I am not at all. And so I'm either like, what if they're just kind of doing a random DNA thing, and they're just mailing you whatever. Like, the people are at Ancestry.com are just, like, giggling, and they're like, we're just going to roll the dice over here. Because I really thought so, and I was so disappointed because I feel mm-hmm. such a strong cultural connection to mm-hmm. Native American everything, and, sure. and I really thought that I was for a long time, so I feel a little bit lost in my heritage. And you with long hair, you would be like a chief. Like, look, you would just look like the image of that. Would be that Paul Eason, who is a very cool looking man. The first time we ever met you at Redbird, we walked away and we got in the truck and he was like, Dallas Burrow is the coolest looking person I've ever met in my life. And that's saying a lot coming from Paul Eason.
Very kind.
He didn't even see you on the grass with the truck with wow. your head on the guitar case.
Yeah.
That was a moment.
Paul's a cool cat, man.
Yeah, we've threatened to do dinner with you for like a long time.
We should.
We have not.
I would love that.
Are you good at cards? Because a lot of your songs talk about cards, and I'm like, you must either be really good at.
I'm okay. I mean, like, a lot of the you know, the card game stuff and songs, it's more of like, it's like a tradition. Like Towns Van Zandt and Ray Wiley Hubbard, you know, it's just really good subject matter for like for folk songs, country songs,
yeah,
blues songs. And growing up, you know, I had some friends that got really really enthusiastic about Texas Hold'em and stuff like that. So we'd play a little bit. You know, there's this saying though that says never play poker with a man named after a city in Texas.
Dallas will beat you at poker. Or cheat. Is that the thing?
I'd never.
Not sure.
No.
No, not you specifically. I just mean like people with names of cities in Texas. Like what's,
maybe.
Are they just really good at it? Or are they just really sly? Or
I don't know. You have to find out.
I'll have to. I'm not playing poker with you now. That's why I ask.
No, we should. Definitely get together and play cards sometime or something. Write a song.
Dinner. Yeah. Well, no, we need to write a song for sure. I love your wife so much. I was just trying to loop her into that, like into our hang.
She's a babe. Yep.
She's a babe town, but she's so cool and she mm-hmm. works hard, and your son's just so cute. I mean, just so cute.
Just dropped him off at horse camp this morning.
Oh.
So that was sweet. I got a cousin up in Manor who has a shout out to Stephanie Ward. She has Suncrest Farms up there and she does, you know, riding lessons and stuff like that. And so anyway, when I was his age, probably 7 or 8, my mom, you know, drove me up to Austin and dropped me off for a week, and I learned to ride.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's so sweet getting to see him following those, you know. Well, anyway, get to have that same experience. Yeah.
That's so fun. And you were in New Mexico for a stint, and you know, like, some of my family and friends down there, which was so wild.
Sure, I got a song about it.
I know. I know. And I don't even remember how your name came up, but I was in Weed, New Mexico,
uh-huh.
and your name came up, and I really? Was like, how do you know Dallas, and what were you doing in New Mexico in the mountains, mm-hmm. running from the law?
Yeah, no, that was...
Oh, I was joking.
Oh, yeah.
No. Oh, okay.
True enough.
I was totally joking.
I don't know, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Great. Yeah. Well, that's a place to do it.
It's the perfect place to do it.
I know. There's a lot of wilderness out there.
Yeah, the land of enchantment. The land, they call it the land of entrapment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got out.
Yeah.
But I love to go back.
Do?
Yes. I love New Mexico. So underrated and gorgeous and beautiful. But if you don't leave there, like every time I go back home, you know, everyone's kind of dating the same, you know,
sure.
It's hard to, it's not really the place that I could go be a musician. I think it's a perfect place. Like, my brothers have beautiful lives and families there, but if I want to go, you know, chase this music dream, I had to leave there, and that
sure.
was the hardest thing I've ever done. But I think New Mexico is just, it's such a gorgeous place, so please visit there. Don't move there, because we all want to keep it affordable for the rest of us, and wild. But that's great. Wait, and last thing, because I know this has flown by, did Jonathan Tyler produce Blood Brothers too?
Yeah.
He
yeah.
did?
Yeah.
What is it like working with him? Because I don't know him that well, and I think he's just a great... I mean, I'm such a fan.
He's badass.
Yeah.
He's a badass, yeah. Yeah, he's a super talented, super cool, super down-to-earth. And, you know, like he made some great records before mine. He did a Jeremy Pinnell record. He did a Nikki Lane record. Just done a Kelly McQuey record before mine. And so... And to his own stuff, he's produced some of his own stuff, and But, you know, it's like I can remember being like 18, like right out of high school, and his band, Jonathan Tyler and the Northern Lights, they were, you know, just
killer,
blowing up and and all that stuff. Then, you know, fast forward whatever, a few years, and then I was listening to KNBT and I hear, what's that song of his, Old Friends, and it was like this whole other kind of like folky thing he was doing. It all kind of happened organically. Like, I had just made a record with Bruce Robinson, and I was hanging out at Samstown Point one night, and at that time Jonathan was living near there, back behind there, and we just got to talking about different stuff, and he invited me to see his studio, and one thing, you know, led to another, and the first thing we recorded was a song that he and I wrote, which tells the story of my dad becoming blood brothers with Townes Van Zandt.
Yeah, that is such a cool song. Is that what that's about?
Yeah.
Shut Your Mouth.
Yeah.
There was one song on there that got me. I started crying, and the name is escaping me right now.
It's probably You Go On Ahead.
Oh, yeah. Well, no. Yes, that one too, but there's a different one. It starts with an A.
A Lot of It Was?
Yes.
Really?
I love that song.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, and kinda so I was going to do that. I was going to say during this podcast, like, it wasn't all your fault, and then I was hoping that you would be like, right to the camera, but a lot of it was. And then this is my third podcast, so I forgot that that was where I was going with that. That feels like my life. I mean, I know it's weird to me when I write a song that I think is so specific to me, but it resonates with other people.
Sure.
So I think that one is like, that was you being autobiographical, and then 100%. Me being like, that is exactly how I feel about my life. And it really got me.
Oh, man.
On my drive home yesterday.
Dang.
I was going to text you, but I was driving and I'm responsible. Did you like how I said it started with an A? And you're like, a lot of it was like,
well, you know, it's funny though. I mean, for one thing, that's a magical thing about songwriting.
Yeah.
It's how you can be really thinking about something that you've been through.
Yeah.
And how you can articulate it and how that will resonate so deeply with somebody else sometimes.
Got me.
It's the magic of it.
Got me good.
That song is actually as much as anything about the Green Hall thing. Actually, as a matter of fact. And, you know, I mean, like, listen, I just got to say, like, it is, you know, I was in the wrong, and I take responsibility for the whole thing. And I am so grateful to the people at the Hall for giving me another shot. But I mean, yeah, like that song, you know, like I poured my heart into, you know, like as much as any career goal, just being able to play it green for me, having grown up here, is like, is one of those things where, you know, it's hard to explain, but anyway, yeah, that's kind of where I was coming from, is, you know, acknowledging that it wasn't all my fault, but a lot of it definitely was.
Dang. Well, I always say, like, people don't change for the most part. I think, like, it's very rare. And so to watch, you know, your journey and what you've done and how, I mean, I think you're just one of the coolest people. I always enjoy talking to you, and I love your story. And I think it's very inspiring because you were like, these people are very important, and I will do anything for these people in your life and for yourself and what you've been able to do. And now you're like this successful entrepreneur and you're playing these shows and you're making these great records. And it's just like, it's just such a beautiful, cool thing.
Thank you very, very, very much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm glad we weren't friends back then, because we would have been firing gasoline.
Sure.
I would have been.
I bet. I'm sure.
I'd be like, do you want to go steal these horses in New Mexico?
Let's go.
And now I'm like, my back hurts a little bit and I'm drinking Diet Coke. So. Right. And last thing, because we got to go and it's hot in here and I'm so sorry, but what's it like being freaking best buds with Charlie Crockett?
Oh man, Charlie's awesome. It's, you know, it's cool. It's been wild to watch his career trajectory do what it's done. But, you know, it's 100% a credit to his hard work and his talent. And it's really cool getting to just like bounce ideas off of somebody like him. You know, like just being able to pick his brain about different things. And you know, honestly, his I guess I think biggest piece of advice to me over the years has been like, do as much you can yourself as long as you can.
I love that advice. I'm a proponent of that. the only times I've almost gone bankrupt is when I was like, I'm going to hire this manager that does nothing and takes all my profit.
Right.
And I shouldn't have done that until it's somebody who can do all the things for you that you can't. I totally believe that. Yeah.
But yeah, you know, I mean, it's like, you know,
it's a lot. It's a lot though.
Like,
lot.
Like, don't worry about the deal. Don't worry about finding management. Don't worry. You know, it's like you want a booking agent, but you know, if like, if you don't need a manager, if you don't need a record label, you don't need somebody to give you permission to make the art you want to make and put it out and go play that song, go play that music and go work. Like, nobody can stop you from doing that.
How's that for timing based on our conversation?
You know,
see, this is exactly what I'm talking about. This is what I get whenever I hang out with Dallas Burrow. So thank you for being here and talking to me and letting my dog molest you. Like, she's
awesome.
She's
listen,
like, I'm going to touch your legs.
I've admired you for a long time. And I think that you are a very inspiring, very talented, very hardworking, I don't know, just awesome artist. And I'm feel lucky to get to be friends with you. So thanks for having me, on your show. And, yeah,
Kyle,
I think
that's it. We're done. I'm done. It's been a long week. See, this video, he gets me every time.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think it's, you have no idea how much, you know, little girls that come to see you play might be inspired by seeing you on stage. You have no idea what your songs might mean to people, you know, in their day-to-day lives. And, you know, it's like, I, you know, like talking about Charlie, talking about, you know, it's like whatever. I know that my songs aren't being heard as by as many people as Charlie's songs, but I know that the people that are hearing my songs, that at least a few of them have let me know that that meant something to them. And I'm cool with that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's like
totally.
whatever impact my art has in the world or whatever, I'm just having a good time and enjoying trying to make and create music that I'm proud of, and trying to create opportunities for other artists to have, you know, be able to put on performances that they can be proud of, and you know, so
that's beautiful. That's the piece that I'm trying to find every day as an artist. So it's an ongoing journey, but it's not all, it was not all my fault, but a lot of it,
but a lot
was.
Of it was.
Yeah. Thank you, Dallas Burrow. Go listen to Blood Brothers. It's an incredible record. You guys just trust me, or all your records are, but I just listened to that one yesterday and on the way home again, and it was spot on. And now we're doing High Fives.
You know what I've been jamming lately?
What? Brie Bagwell.
The one about the cowboy.
If You Were a Cowboy?
Yeah.
That's the only song I've recorded that I didn't write. But I was like, my producer wrote that, Rachel Loy. And I was like, and if you watch my music video, I'm riding a horse in slow motion because I don't know exactly what I'm doing. I need to go to Stephanie's horse
That's
camp.
What's up. Yeah, she teach you how.
For real.
Yeah. Suncrest Farms.
I'm okay, but I'm not as good as people think that I am because my family's like in the NFR and stuff. So
right. But you grew up riding some though, right?
Yeah. Like, but not like.
You're comfortable on a horse.
But I want to go like.
But.
I want to go real fast and.
Like supposed to, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm comfortable.
There's a certain like thing that you have to do in the saddle that takes.
Yeah, I think I instinctively know how to do that from being on horses, like most of, you know, growing up. But I want to be. I mean, I want to go like I want to go work cows and stuff like.
No,
that's
I hear you.
That's how good I want to be.
I'm not like super punchy myself, by any, you know, okay. Like I, you know, I'm not like. Whatever. I can ride a little bit. You know what
well,
I mean?
Well, I still want to go steal some horses with you sometime.
We could do that. I can ride well enough for that, for sure.
Okay, me too.
Okay. All right, let's go.
I'll drink Diet Coke. Okay, bye.
The devil may care. All I could do was laugh. As long as I remember, well, I've been on this path. I came into town. Free and wild, I thought I might hang around for a while. I can't catch a break, can't catch a buzz. It wasn't all my fault, but a lot of it was.